Hey, welcome to Speak Up Arkansas. We're here in the KABF studios for the weekly talk show about progressive politics and policy. And today we are actually going to be talking about the education landscape here in Arkansas. My name is Kyle Lamberger. I am the communication specialist with the Arkansas Education Association. And I'm joined here by a few of our members, and I'd like for you to go ahead and introduce yourselves.
My name is Roy Bond. I teach at Little Rock Central High. I've been an educator for going on 16 years, and I've seen a lot during my tenure as a teacher and also as a student in public education.
Hi, I'm Pam Fitzgibbon. I'm an elementary school teacher in Pulaski County Special School District. I am also currently the president of Pulaski Association of Classroom Teachers. I've been in the classroom now for 24 years.
Great. All right. And so the topic that we're planning to talk about today is the Arkansas teacher pipeline shortage. We actually have a declining number of people who are interested in becoming teachers. And so we're kind of going to talk about why we think that is. And we're also going to talk about kind of the environment around education. We've had some recent attempts to do away with the Teacher Fair Dismissal Act. And we're going to talk about how about that and maybe how that plays into these people who are maybe not as interested in joining the profession. But during the show, we also want to hear from you. So if you hear something that you'd like to comment on, you can email speakupar@gmail.com, or you can call in at 501-433-0088 to weigh in. That's 501-433-0088. And so I guess just to kick things off, Pam, let's start with you. Why did you decide to become an educator?
Well, I know this is going to sound a little cliche, but I wanted to make a difference. I love working with children, and I believe I have made a difference for our students in the 24 years that I've been teaching.
And how about a member of AEA? Oh, why are you a member of the association?
I am a member because I strongly believe that you need to be a member of your professional organization. They are the ones that support the profession. In many ways, professional development, not just from a legal standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And Roy, how about you?
Okay, I'm going to begin by saying I never wanted to be a teacher at first. But as I began my college career and I was able to go into classrooms, I was able to see the educational landscape of students and the light come on for them. And I wanted to be a part of that. And in the 16 years that I've spent in the classroom, I've been able to touch a lot of lives. The first day I became a teacher, I went into my classroom for the first time. After I got off work, I asked my grandmother, to make me a special dinner or whatever. And when I got there, she said, "Well, how was it?" And I told her, it felt like I didn't go to work. I felt like I went to class. And she told me, she said, I've seen a lot of things in my life, but I've never seen somebody who go to work and tell me that they feel like they never went. And so that's the way I felt for the whole 16 years that I've been teaching, like I've never gone to work a day in my life. And that tells me that I have a passion for the work that I do.
Yeah. And why are you a member of AEA?
I'm a member of AEA because we have a lot of things that goes on as educators and as teachers that I want to definitely have a voice in. And through the professional organization, you can have a voice outside of just the classroom. Now, in the classroom, I'm able to teach. I'm able to direct my pedagogical education toward my students. But with the AEA, I'm able to then start to try to influence policy by way of legislation and different things like that, the advocacy things that we do, not just for students, but for teachers as well.
Yeah, great. Well, can you kind of talk to me about what you guys are seeing just as far as education here in Arkansas? What's it like in the classroom? What's it like kind of the environment outside? What are you hearing about the profession?
Well, what's it like in the classroom is a lot different than what it's like on the outside. The classroom, you're focused in on those students and making sure those students get what they need. Outside the classroom, it seems to be a lot of negative publicity, the way I feel, with teachers. The workload has, over the course of the year since I've been teaching, I've seen a huge increase in that, which does impact on the students in the classroom because you spend more time worrying about test scores and getting this piece of paper filled out because it has to be turned in. And less time really focusing on the individual students. That's my personal opinion on that. But I'm hoping that we can start seeing a change. I'm hoping that with the so-called shortage and the pipeline of teachers coming, having to come in from out of state, that we will start seeing a positive change and create our own pipeline within Arkansas, so that we don't have this shortage anymore.
Well, in the classroom, again, it's education happening every day. Mm-hmm. Teachers come to class, they teach kids every single day. But on the outside, you hear that teachers aren't teaching, that they're not doing what they're supposed to do, and it's that rhetoric that drives people away from this profession. I feel like as an educator, we're not as respected as we should be within our community. Every person that sits in any position of authority have had to have gone through school. They had to have been impacted by teachers. And those same teachers that they seem to be forgetting and in their legislative practices are the same teachers that stood in front of them and taught them everything from the alphabet all the way to the highest levels of chemistry and different things of that nature. So as a teacher in the classroom, I don't necessarily think that things have completely changed, because teachers way back when taught, teachers today teach. The way, the method of delivery has changed, but I ultimately believe that the teachers are still doing a great job teaching, but on the outside, the rhetoric is just so bad, and it's poisoning basically the field of education, and so people believe that they don't need to get into the profession anymore.
Where do you guys think that poisonous rhetoric is coming from?
Okay, I believe that it's coming, number one, we have a lot coming from the media, but also we have a lot of things coming from politicians. When you start looking at, even if we go all the way back into 2000, when they came up with No Child Left Behind, the rhetoric switched in such a way that the test scores became the end-all, be-all to the educational landscape altogether. And when you think about that toxic environment, it proceeded for 8 years. It persisted for 8 years at least. Then it went on into the Obama administration, and it continued to erode the educational landscape that we had already built. And anytime a school would reach a point where they were becoming successful, the measurement tool would change. And so it kept people like on a hamster wheel. If you weren't successful, it kept you unsuccessful. If you were successful, a lot of times, if you were marginal, you fell below the line. If you were exceptional, they made you basic. So I feel like that's the rhetoric that started to poison the educational landscape that we valued as young people, as students going through public education.
Very good. And I would just like to say that teachers know how to teach. And I don't know if you've ever heard teachers say this, just let me close the door and let me teach. We know as individuals, as professionals, what our kids need. We don't have to look at test scores to know what Bobby or Susie needs to be successful in life. And it's frustrating as a teacher, as what Roy was saying. A lot of times I go to work, just let me close the door and teach my students. We know, we are educated, and we know what each individual student needs to be successful. And I just wish they would let us do that.
Yeah. And it seems like there's also kind of a concerted effort from the very wealthy who are pushing an idea of, you know, they call it school reform, but it's basically privatization. Is that where a lot of this stuff is coming, this negative narrative for public schools?
I think so. I think so. Public schools, the charter schools are being, you know, pushed. There's talks of taking money from public schools and putting into charter schools. And that's not always the answer. I have, like I said, I've been teaching 24 years. I have seen children come, and I've seen them come back, or leave and come back. I've seen them gone early, and then they come back when they're in about the fifth grade, and there is a huge gap of where they should be, and they have been in a private sector. I recently read an article in Scientific American about a study that was done in Washington, D.C. on the charter schools, and there is a huge gap in the reading and math on students who attended those schools because they have other areas that they can focus on. They offer a lot more of these extra classes that public schools don't, and public schools still are focusing on the basics, the reading, the writing, the math, the important things that are really going to get them ahead in life.
Well, again, I believe that the private sector is really trying to erode the public schools, period. That's what's happening. And understanding that they have millionaires and billionaires who have figured out a way to profit from public education monies, it's opened up so many floodgates. And it's like, as a teacher, we can see it. We see the product of it in our classrooms. They're skimming off some of our best students, but also we have to educate all students, whereas in those private sector, those charter schools, et cetera, they don't necessarily have to educate all students. And I know that there's proponents who say, yes, we do. We have to educate all students. But there's systems set in place that allows them to send those students back to their public schools. And we have to catch them all. We have to teach them all. Mm-hmm. And we're doing that every single day. We walk into our classroom, no matter who is sitting there, no matter what zip code they come from, we have to teach them. We lock that door, like you were saying, Pam, and we go to work. We make sure that every student is successful in our classrooms every single day, calling parents, doing individual work with them, making sure that things are right at home. All of those things are things that are outside of our normal teaching practice, but we do them every day because we know they have to be done in order for us to truly educate not only the minds of the child, but the whole child. That's what true education is. It's not necessarily about just test scores. You have to educate the entire child, not just say, okay, Timmy, I've taught you 2 + 2. Now we have to go to this new thing. If you don't know why 2 + 2 = 4, we have to make sure that you understand those things. You also have to understand how that translates into real life, money, into everything. So we are trying to educate whole children, not necessarily push a program like some of these charter schools and even some private schools do.
One of the targets that I think that these groups are going after is the Teacher Fair Dismissal Act. I wonder if could one of you explain what the Teacher Fair Dismissal Act is and what it means for you as an educator?
Okay. Well, the Teacher Fair Dismissal Act is basically due process for teachers, and being a public school employee, we deserve that. We deserve to have a due process. It's just an outline as to we have the right to have in writing why we are being recommended for termination in order to prepare for a hearing. Then we have the hearing, and it's just a basic due process as to why this teacher was getting fired, and she had, or he, has the right to stand up in front of the board and support why they shouldn't do that. So it's just basic steps of due process that is important, and it is our individual right for that. Otherwise, we could be fired for arbitrary reasons, which could open the door again for discrimination among employees in the districts.
Yeah, along those same lines, it allows teachers a safety net, if you will, for the pedagogy that they teach, for the knowledge base that they have. Let's say I'm teaching some content that falls within my scope of practice, but yet it's something that maybe the principal or someone doesn't agree with. I'm still given that opportunity to teach that material to the students because they deserve the a full education, not just an education that's tailored for certain students of certain demographics, et cetera. So that allows teachers the real autonomy to plan lessons and to get in there and to really explore and grapple with certain texts and certain books that may not be quote unquote acceptable in a lot of situations. However, it's something that teachers and something that our community may need to read and understand. So it's important that teachers have that opportunity to make sure that that works.
Yeah, and you know, the Teacher Fair Dismissal Act, even though it's titled teacher, people have to understand that it affects not only the teachers but administrators in the individual school districts. Anyone who holds a teaching license is protected under this law, excluding this, I believe, the superintendent, deputy superintendent. And it creates job security. You know, that like Roy Vaughn was alluding to, that we can go in and we can do our jobs and we can't just be fired at whim for, like I said, arbitrary reasons. They have to have just cause. And then, it, like I said, it allows us to be able to have a fair hearing.
Even more than that, it provides continuity
yes.
in the classrooms, because the teachers who start with your kids usually end the school year with them, whereas if it didn't exist, if they felt like getting rid of you for whatever reason, you could be let go.
What would that do for your students?
Well, it's really devastating. When you have a constant change of authority and teaching style and different things like that in the classroom, that lack of continuity wreaks havoc in the classroom. It creates a tumultuous environment for them to learn and for them to come to every single day. I've seen where I've taught at a school where there was high teacher turnover, and it did wreak havoc on the climate within the building as well. So having this Teacher Fair Dismissal Act helps to create that continuity needed to really streamline our educational system, as well provide some security for teachers and for students, not just teachers, but for students as well.
Yeah, let me go ahead and remind our listeners that this show is called Speak Up Arkansas, and we do want to hear from you on the show. So if you hear something that you'd like to comment on, please email speakupar@gmail.com, or you can call in at 501-433-0088. Again, that's 501-433-0088. And so we're talking about the Teacher Fair Dismissal Act, and you know, during the legislative session, there was a bill that was filed that would have done away with it statewide. That bill, fortunately, didn't go very far. But just recently, actually last week, a school district in eastern Arkansas applied for a waiver from the Teacher Fair Dismissal Act. And I'm just going to go ahead and read you verbatim what the request was for this waiver. And if you guys could maybe just tell me what you think about it when you hear it. So this is what the superintendent of the school district said. "We have a very good school in Palestine, but it's still in East Arkansas. We have a teaching vacancy we advertise online and in newspapers, as well as go to job fairs, but we still have very few applicants. Many times we're forced to hire, quote, someone with a pulse and a license, end quote, knowing they will be harmful to our children. We do not get to look through a stack of applications, pick the best four, interview them, and hire the best one. Instead, we have to hire whoever applies. Many times we know they're not going to be good for our children." What do you think?
I'm sorry. I don't even know how to respond to that, but I'm just in awe, shocked, to say the least. It just makes no sense to me. Why would you do that? If anything, I think you could look around the community and at least hire somebody temporarily to come in there that you know that would not do harm to the students until they could find somebody. But I think more importantly, what the school district needs to focus more on is what can we do to get teachers to come to our district? I mean, that to me would be the question. What can we offer teachers to get to come here? And it's not always necessarily about money. You know, programs, anything. Well, then I guess that's kind of tied to money. I shouldn't say that, but I'm not talking teacher salary necessarily. But you think of, get with the community. You know, that's really important. If you've got a community that works well with that school district and they're tight, they will find ways to get teachers to come to their district. And I think that's what this particular school district needs to be focused more on than trying to get a waiver to where they can just fire a teacher when they're done with them.
That, honestly, when you were reading that, it just sounded completely asinine. So it seems like they want to hire someone just to fire them. That makes absolutely no sense. If you feel like they won't be good for students, they shouldn't make it through the interview process to begin with. But even more than that, you there's something called human capital. You know, you have to think about the human aspect of it. When you hire someone for a position, for a job, you give them the opportunity to provide for their families and to not have any type of safety net. You can be fired at will. You can be let go because for any arbitrary reason. That makes absolutely no sense, and that will further weaken an already weak teacher pipeline force, if you will, going into the profession. I mean, now as educators, we go into the classroom, we know that we have something that helps us and helps us to stand up whenever we're trying to be, whenever like administrators and different things like that try to bully us or anything like that. We have a safety net there so that we can stand on. Without that, we have nothing. And that's going to further erode the educational landscape of this country. Even more than that, it's going to further weaken the educator-teacher force. And when I say teacher, I'm talking about everybody who carries a license in, you know, in Arkansas in a public school or even in the private sector. It's going to weaken that.
What would it surprise you if I told you that we actually had the vote for that was 5-4, and it just barely failed by one vote?
Yeah, I am extremely shocked by that. I don't even know why it wouldn't have been a 0-9 vote on that. The argument alone, like Roy Vaughn said, is asinine. I'm shocked that they would even present that to the board and that the board would vote 4-5. It just makes no sense.
It's just so unbelievable that a profession that touches every single life of every person in this country comes under this type of scrutiny and this type of it's almost like backdoor dealings, if you will. That vote was unbelievable, and it's still unbelievable even today to know that we live in a society that values teachers at that level. I mean, that's very, very devaluing.
Yeah. All right. I want to remind everyone that we do want to hear from you on the show. If you hear something that you'd like to comment on, please email speakupar@gmail.com, or you can call in at 501-433-0088. And can we go ahead and take a break? We'll be right back here, and we're going to talk about, following this, we're going to talk about how this environment is contributing to a shortage of teachers here in Arkansas, and also maybe what we can do about it to change that. All right, welcome back to Speak Up Arkansas. We are here with a few members of the Arkansas Education Association. And if you guys don't mind, go ahead and reintroduce yourselves now that we're in the second half of the hour, starting with you.
All right, my name is Roy Vaughn. I'm a teacher at Little Rock Central High. I've been a teacher for 16 years. I'm a member of the Arkansas Educators Association as well as the Little Rock Educators Association.
My name is Pam Fitzgibbon. I'm an elementary school teacher in Pulaski County Special School District. I'm currently president of Pulaski Association of Classroom Teachers, and I've been teaching for 24 years.
And my name is Kyle Landberger, and I'm the communications specialist for the Arkansas Education Association. And this is Speak Up Arkansas, and we definitely want to hear from you on the show. So if you hear something that you'd like to comment on, email speakupar@gmail.com or call in at 501-433-0088. And so today what we're talking about is kind of the environment of education here in Arkansas. We've got kind of a negative narrative that's being pushed by some that are maybe trying to damage public education. And so that environment is also contributing to a teacher shortage here. Arkansas actually has, the Bureau of Legislative Research recently released a report showing that the five-year attrition rate of Arkansas teachers is over 36%. What do you guys think about that as teachers? Do you see that in your building? Do you see new teachers kind of discouraged and maybe walking away?
Yes, I was a new teacher mentor for a little while at the previous school that I taught, and it was really hard to get the teacher that I was mentoring to remain in the profession. Even last year at my current site, there was a teacher at the end of the year. He was turning in everything, and I asked, I said, where are you going? He had been a teacher. That was his second year. He said, it's just too much. I think I'm going to go home. And I asked him, I said, what are you doing now? Do you have another job or anything? He said, I've saved up a little bit. I think I'm just going to do something else. And that was so disheartening because this was an amazing teacher, had great passion for the work, for the kids, but it just didn't seem like we had enough to keep them in the profession, rather it be whatever building they're teaching in or the actual work of a teacher is really, really tough. And it's just not enough to go to your classroom and teach these days. You have so many other things, like Pam was talking about a little while ago. So many other things that pull you as a teacher. And honestly, the pay is just not there.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a huge thing, that the salary and the benefits, they're not comparable to what they were when I first started, compared to the workload that has been placed on teachers in the classroom. Again, I think the negative publicity is another cause for people not going into the profession. They see the profession lack of respect for teachers. We see that regularly. And why would you want to put yourself in that position? Go to school, go to college, like you were saying in the during the break, Roy Vaughn, about the student loan that teachers get.
Yes.
Or to go to school to be a teacher. And then they get out and they have a family or just their individual self to support. Mm-hmm. And then trying to pay back those teachers' loans. And it's a lot.
Well, as a single guy myself, I don't really know any single teachers who only teach, that's their only job. Most people who are single like me, we have to have other jobs. We have to do other things to make money to supplement, because we just don't make enough in the classrooms to really sustain our lives at the level that we should be as educated professionals. You can look at the salary of a second, third, fourth year, even a 16-year teacher. I have 16 years of experience. If you look at someone with a master's degree plus hours, in almost any other profession, they probably make almost double my base salary. What do I have to do in order to make ends meet? I have to have a second job. I have to do other things so that I can pay my loans. I have to pay my living expenses, different things like that. So some teachers who are new to the profession, they just don't make enough money, and they feel like they can do better doing other things.
I mean, I gotta ask you, why are you still doing this?
Well, the reason why I still teach is because I know that the work that I do matters, period. The work that I do matters. I was blessed to be surrounded in high school and middle school and even elementary school with teachers who cared. Can I give a little personal story?
Please.
All right, when I was 13 years old, my mom passed away tragically of cancer. And we were taken away from everything that we actually knew. My place of solace and solitude was actually the students and the teachers that was in my home room when I was in Detroit. The students wrote cards, the teacher came to her funeral, her service, and I felt loved by them. And after that, when I was in middle school in Arkansas, the teachers showed so much compassion and love. And of course, you know, I was the product of a very, very broken system growing to school in Detroit. When I came to Arkansas, the system, believe it or not, was a lot better. Those teachers took their time. They took extra time with me. They helped me. And when I got to college, like I said, I never wanted to be a teacher. But when I got into the classroom and started helping some of my other friends who were in education programs, I said, this is what I'm made to do. This is what I want to do. And I went through the non-traditional program myself, and that's how I became a teacher.
What do you think, is there any way that we can engage parents in this to kind of help turn around this narrative, this negative narrative that we're seeing? What would you like to see parents do to kind of help you guys succeed?
Well, I have an open door policy where I'm at. You know, I haven't had a chance. We had parent-teacher conferences just Monday, and I haven't even had a chance. So if any of my parents are listening, you know this now. But I would love for my parents just to come in anytime and just observe and see what I do on a regular basis. I think it would be wonderful to have more parents in the classroom. The issue that I see as an elementary teacher is the standards that we are to teach the students. And a lot of parents that I have conferenced with, they don't understand. I teach math, and they don't understand a lot of the concepts. It's different than what the way they were taught, and they don't feel like they can help their students at home. And to me, that's tragic. When a parent feels that they cannot help their own child, and that's just wrong. So I, as a teacher, have always told them, you're not doing anything wrong. You teach your child how you know what you know, and they're going to learn. They're going to learn regardless, and then let me worry about the standards in the classroom. And when I've had that approach with parents, it's amazing. I've had parents come in my classroom in the morning before school starts at times, and I show them, okay, this is what we're doing in math. It's real easy. Let me show you. And they get excited about it. I think we need to do a lot more of that in the classroom. Invite our parents to come in. Invite them to be engaged with the students. Invite them to see what we're doing, especially when they're coming to you and saying, I don't feel comfortable teaching my child at home anymore. Yeah.
Well, one thing that I think parents could do to change the narrative of the narrative of negativity toward teachers is actually talk about the great things that teachers are doing for their children. A lot of times we don't hear from parents until there's something bad that happens, and then you see them on the news. You hear them in the community. You hear all of these things. But in those same students' lives, there's been tons of other teachers who have done amazing things for their children. If we start to engage parents so that they tell people in the community what we're doing for their kids, I think that would change the narrative in our communities about public education as a whole.
All right. And I just want to remind everyone that we would like to hear from you on the show. If you hear something that you'd like to comment on, please email speakuparkansas@gmail.com or call in at 501-433-0088. And we've actually got a new guest in the studio now. Senator Elliott, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Doris Elliott. I'm the state senator from District 31 here in Little Rock. But more important to this conversation, I was a longtime teacher. I taught high school for 30 years, English and speech. And, I hear us talking about teachers and what it means, but I feel that it's the greatest privilege of my professional life to have had the opportunity to be a teacher, because I actually wanted to do it all my life. I wanted to do two things in my life more than anything else. That was to be a teacher, and secondly, to be in politics, and I've gotten to do both. And I regret not one bit of it. I would still be teaching today had I not got into politics. I absolutely had a great career. I loved it, and I tell people all the time, you know, don't just think about it, do it if your heart is in it, because I do believe we need to treat teachers like the rock stars they are. And I do believe we ought to be much better about doing what other countries do who are so successful in education, and treating our teachers as nation builders. And because I think more than anything else, teachers are our first line of defense. Because an educated populace will make different decisions, will comport themselves differently in the world, and will be the problem solvers that we need so badly today. So not to get that teachers are the ones who make all that possible really is missing something very important in our lives and our democracy.
And we've been kind of talking about the landscape here in Arkansas, and you can maybe offer a different, we've been talking about in the classroom and what we see, you know, out in the public airwaves. What are you seeing on the legislative side? What is going on up at the Capitol?
There are many people up there who really respect teachers and really want to make it possible for teachers to be able to carry out their responsibilities in ways that are not weighted down by the expectation that society can act as society wants to, and then teachers in the classroom are supposed to solve all the problems. There are not enough people there like that, because we have some people who still have the attitude that basically anybody can teach. Just give them a few hours of what we call professional development or preparation, And that really negates the real importance of teaching. For example, you know, if I were going to get on an airplane, I wouldn't say, oh, please put me on the plane with a pilot who has the least experience and the least training. I'd never do that. I wouldn't do that if I were calling an architect, a plumber, whoever. So there really has been, I think, a very unhealthy movement that's, you know, that's resulted in legislation that anybody, especially for kids that are underserved, we don't solve the problems, for example, for why somebody's not going to a place to teach. We just have lowered the bar so anybody can be in the classroom and call him or herself a teacher. That kind of legislation, I think, is hurt more than anything. And I go to the Department of Education committee meetings. It is stunning to me how many waivers are asked for every single time of anybody becoming a teacher, because we're not solving other problems. Then teachers may not be attracted to a particular area in the state. And we say that's the best we can do. Well, it is if we are not going to resolve the issues that are not attracting, the reasons people not attracted to live in X city. But it's always the children who need, who are the most needy. I think that's what's really bugging me more than anything.
And Senator Elliott, there was the law that was passed to allow, because before, the only schools that could get waivers from laws were charter schools.
Yes, yeah.
And then we had the law passed to where any school could get a waiver.
That's right.
And it doesn't make sense to me, because it's almost as if putting you all out of a job.
Yeah, and you know? And if it did make sense to you, I'd be worried, because it makes no sense. We actually passed the law in our state. You know, I've been a part of a group in the last 2.5 years studying what the highest performing countries in the world are doing. And the one thing that they are absolutely certain about is making sure we have teachers who are well trained. They don't even talk about, what are you talking about, alternative certification? They don't even know what that means, because we're not going to do this, you know, to our kids. And they won't even, for example, you can't get promoted for it if you don't prove yourself in places. In many of these countries, you have to prove yourself that you can make it in this place that might be the most challenged. That's how much they value teaching and education. And we passed a law, it's one of the worst laws we've ever passed. We passed some doozies, but the one that says anything can be waived. So I don't want people to think this big line of waivers are coming from charter schools. No, they're coming from our traditional, regular public schools, because we passed a law that said basically you can get a waiver for almost anything if there is a charter school that's located in your district or recruiting kids from your school district. Well, the virtual charter schools recruit from everywhere, so everybody has a reason.
So we're coming up on the 60th anniversary of the Central High desegregation crisis, and I'm wondering, what other issues do you guys see that we're facing today here in Arkansas that remain?
Well, some of the issues that still remain is zoning. And
attendance zoning.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Attendance zoning is one of the issues that I can see that, if given the opportunity, would be even worse. But even more than that, it's those waivers. Mm-hmm. I mean, being able to waive things that have been passed because of past practice.
Right.
We already know what happens when we don't have these keepsakes in place. But now we're giving people the option. That's like saying, okay, you can't speed, but you can speed, because you have a speed waiver on your driver's license. It makes no sense.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know I got here late, so I guess I want to talk.
No, you're fine.
I was rushing trying to get here because I really wanted to be here. But the other things I see that are just more systemic, it's always bothered me that we start identifying kids who are gifted and talented with a certain kind of rubric, And I don't think that honors the gifts of all kids. But what happens, that starts a process that goes all the way through to me for something that's even more important to address, is that those same kids generally are the ones who end up in the AP classes. Many times those kids have been together all the way through. Well, AP classes, there are not requirements for kids to be in an AP class, and yet many people do that. Mm-hmm. There are not prerequisites to be in an AP class unless it's maybe a class like if you're taking a foreign language. Obviously, you can't just show up and go, I'm AP, and you know, and I've never seen Arabic before, and maybe one other. So that's something that systemically I think we need to be looking at all across the state. And because generally when that happens, the kids who get left out are the same ones who always get left out. And the other thing that I think is an issue in education is the heavy hand I think that we're exercising from the state level and taking over schools. We know that's happened here in Little Rock. Yes. But the way it almost seems as if it's a given, if it's a black or brown predominantly school district, that, and coming up on, you know, Central, that was all about those kids, you know, who wanted an opportunity to go to what they thought was the best school, and they want to go to a desegregated school. And we have schools right now that are hyper-segregated still. 60 years ago, 2017. 60 years ago, you know, the state was basically under control of the governor and the president or whoever it was, from, you know, depending on the time. Here we are, 60 years later, this school district's under control of the state for no defensible reason. And I specifically say defensible because they give the reasons. It is not defensible within the law. And just as what happened 60 years ago really was not defensible within the law, that's why the court said, don't do this. So, and you know, and I really, the last thing I would say, I want so much for Arkansas to just go big, and let's just look at what it will take for our kids to be able to compete on the world stage, not the Arkansas stage, not the United States stage, and say, let's have some really tough standards, high standards, but do everything we're supposed to help kids reach them.
But attainable standards for our students, not something that they're never going to be able to attain.
And the thing of it is, when I look at, and because it is not something they are not going to be able to attain, but if we have a system in place to get them there, like I've looked at what these other countries are doing. I had a visitor from Israel. They were visiting the capital, and I love to receive different folks there. And I had this group of educators I was talking to, and the first thing one of them said was, the one from Israel, they're from different countries, oh my God, I looked at your standards and they are so low. It's not anything like what we have. And we think we have good high standards. I'm here to tell you, we don't. We have to think differently about what our kids can do. That's mm-hmm. the reason we have teachers, we have support. But the other thing they do, they start from the bottom up with equity, making sure kids are prepared when they get there. So it's very attainable. We just need to have the support so that they can do it. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. And support teachers, support parents. Have, you know, look at improving communities, because that's what these other countries are doing.
Well, and that's, you know, the support mm-hmm. is key,
mm-hmm.
Senator Elliott. Yeah. That's what I have down here on the item that we're on right now, mm-hmm. is the lack of support.
Mm-hmm.
And if teachers don't have the support they need, whether it is instructional support, support for discipline in mm-hmm. the classroom, mm-hmm. that is a huge impact directly on those students.
Mm-hmm. Sure, it mm-hmm. is.
Well, in a different vein, I also look at the actual testing companies.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at those testing companies and the development of those tests, are they really creating tests that truly measure what they say that they're measuring?
Mm-hmm.
I always found it really hard when I'm administering a test, I can't look at the test, I can't read the
right.
test, I don't know what those students are going through. All I know is what the testing company says is in that test.
Mm-hmm.
As a teacher, I have no access to that at mm-hmm. all, to know what these kids are actually being tested on, but yet my almost my entire career is based on the ambiguity of these tests. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, well, these are release items. What didn't you release? Mm-hmm. I always look at things like that. It always seems like a double-edged sword to give a test to kids that teachers prepared them for, but the teacher have no idea what's mm-hmm. being asked mm-hmm. on the test. Mm-hmm. Yes, we know the standards that are supposed to be measured in the test, but do we actually know that that's what's mm-hmm. being measured? Because we have no way right. of knowing.
No, because we've commercialized education in ways we should not. This is like when you, so let's just say you're going to buy a car, you have to have faith that what they tell you is on that car is on that car. And so I'm okay with that being a car because it's a thing. I'm not okay with that being, I want the car to be okay, but I'm not okay with the way testing has become the thing in education. It is obscene because what it's reduced us to is testing rather than educating.
Right.
Yes.
And this is wrong for kids. This testing is not preparing kids for their future. Educating them is what's going to prepare them. And so, but there is big money to be made. There's big money to be, I hope people don't miss that so much of what's happening now is about big money. I don't care if it's charter schools or testing or somebody's got the greatest professional development plan or whatever. And I think because these other countries that I mentioned, they have specific tests at certain areas for certain little things, for certain things. But it's nothing like what we do here. Well, it's obscene what we do here.
Well, the thing with testing is I never miss, when you follow the money with testing, if every student was proficient on that test, they would change the measurement tool because
yes. they wouldn't make money.
They wouldn't make money
anymore.
Yes.
And so we're basing our educational quote-unquote failures on the fact that these testing companies created tests that not every student
yes.
can be successful on.
And let me remind you of something else with these tests, too, because they have people put such faith in these tests. And, if you just think about this for a moment, that's a math and it's a reading. It's a math and it's a language arts test. Those are really important. But that's like two subjects in the whole school experience. And
yes.
suppose your child wants to be in theater, let's just say, and the best theater program in the whole city, and it's great, is in a school where you go, I don't like their test scores. You know what happens to your kids then when you put so much faith in that test? They don't get a chance to go to the school that has the best. Just as an example, we put so much stock in it. Sweden used to be one of the world leaders in education. Sweden went down this road of commercialized education the same way we've done in the United States. Sweden is now way down, not quite as low as we are, but they failed because it's I'm telling you, it's a game. And if we don't catch on to that, I was never tested at a statewide level to see if I was going to be okay. Never.
How should we... we can see it. You guys see what's going on. How do we get involved, and how do people put a stop to this before it's too late?
Yeah. Am I going first? Well, we talked about teachers need support, kids need support. Well, if we're going to change this, the folks who are working at trying to change it, like me and so many others out there, we need people to stop saying they don't have time to get involved and learn about what's going on. None of us will ever have time. But the minute we say that gives all the other people, the testing companies and everybody. So it starts out, much of it starts out by becoming knowledgeable. And, you can talk to me about that later, how that happens. But then it's about who you put in office,
mm-hmm.
who we elect. There are people who will vote for the same people who voted for the waivers and did all the other things that we're doing. They voted for these folks knowing what their philosophies are. And then they're turned to legislators like me or others and ask us to stop it. We don't have the votes to stop it. And this is about people making decisions and electing folks who believe, who somehow have bought this line. We have been doing the testing business and all the things we are doing to hurt our educational system for the last 25 years. Does it really take 25 years for us to know this is not working? And when somebody starts talking to you about accountability and it's all about a testing, we need to really question these things. And this stuff passes easily. Easily. And the best thing about teachers is, I know, I heard people say it when I was a teacher, I just want them to let me go into my room and teach. Well, good luck with that, because that's not going to happen. You got to come out of your room and get involved. And the same thing with parents. I'm too tired at the end of the day. I can't do anything. Well, they can, and I get it. I'm a parent. I've been in the class. I'm not talking just to be talking, but this is what has to happen. So
I agree. I will say that. I think we're running out of time, but I did want to say I agree with everything you said. Mm-hmm. And teachers don't realize what kind of voice, what kind of impact they truly can have if they just quit saying, I don't have the time.
Yeah, I can't
and
do
just
it.
Make the time. Uh-huh. Yeah. If you make the time, you will be amazed at what you can get done.
That's right. I mean, just send an email, make a phone call. And the best of all circumstances, show up when things are happening. I mean, I've graded papers until 3 o'clock in the morning because I was somewhere until 10. I know what that means. I really do understand what that means. Mm-hmm. And then get a kid up the next day and say, we're going to school and hope I make it.
Now, if I have just 1 minute, because I do want to say, I was that teacher a while ago that said, close the door and just let me teach.
Uh-huh.
But I was referring to the workload that's put on teachers.
Yeah.
Leave me alone with that stuff. I know what I need to do to help my students. So I just want to clarify that.
Okay, I was not. Yeah, I was. Yeah, I was talking
here for that. I just
I was talking politics. Yeah.
Well, when you come out that classroom, let your voice and your ballot speak for education.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's always what I do. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what party you are, just know that you need to vote for education every time, because your wallets are going to definitely reflect the educational system that provides those jobs.
Mm-hmm. Do we have time for me to make a request to parents? That's it. Okay, I'll wait. Mm-hmm.
Make it quick.
Okay, I just want to request of parents out there to care about other people's kids. Don't be satisfied just because your child is okay. We still need you to be involved. Maybe you're lucky and at a great school. Help other people's kids.
All right, I want to thank everybody for being here on Speak Up Arkansas today. And next week, we are going to be talking about the time of earthquakes and hurricanes. What are Arkansas's emergency management challenges, and what preparedness do we have? We've got tornadoes, earthquakes, flooding. These are just a few of the challenges facing Arkansas. What are the risks, and who's most vulnerable? Tune in next week to Speak Up Arkansas.
I think you're going to be here next week.
This is KABF 88.3 FM in Little Rock. Voice of the people for all of Arkansas.
This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas. It's time for Radio Cows, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we'll share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, chewing the fat with Rex and Paul, and much, much more. We invite you to let us know what else you want to hear by contacting us at radio.